All right, now we're going to talk about flapper skate. Have you ever seen a flapper skate, Terence?
No, I've never actually seen a flapper skate, but what I have seen are the mermaid's purses, and I've seen lots and lots
now,
of them.
Now, mermaid's purses. Come on, come on, come on, come on, come on.
A mermaid's purse is the egg case of the skate.
And the skate is a?
Fish.
What family does it belong to, Ken?
So it's an elasmobranch, so it doesn't have bone.
An elasmobranch?
An elasmobranch, yeah. So it's the first cousin of a shark. It doesn't have bone. It has cartilage. It has hard cartilage. So if Terry hasn't actually seen a flapper skate, let me try and describe in words what a flapper skate looks like. I'm going to make a crazy analogy. Can you imagine a bat, Derek?
Yes, I can.
Okay, so the bat has his wings out, okay? And doubtless you have seen on David Attenborough, you have seen manta rays.
Mm-hmm.
So if you take a cross between a bat with its lovely big wings spread out and a manta ray, that's this beautiful brownish colour and it has its mouth underneath and literally glides through the water using these enormous wings. And they are absolutely enormous. And some of these creatures live to a ripe old age and they're very large, hundreds of pounds in weight. And basically, it moves along by flapping slowly these huge big wings.
Oh.
It sits on the bottom, lives on the bottom, and then it just moves to grab its prey. But they are really fascinating to watch in the water and even more fascinating when they're up close. And they have this incredible ridge right down along their back and through the top of their head. So the eyes are protruding out and the mouth is underneath. And the ridge is very, very obvious when you see one as a live creature in the water. They are just stunning.
I remember snorkeling off the coast of Florida years and years and years ago and seeing spotted eagle ray beneath us. And it was the most extraordinary. But they were so graceful in the water.
Beautiful.
And that's what you're saying a flapper skate is like.
Absolutely. And when they take off the bottom, they take off very, very, very slowly, but they're extraordinarily powerful and can take very big, long runs. So in the past, anglers used to catch them accidentally and they were renowned for being able to move very, very quickly from a very slow start with enormous power behind the wings.
Anyway, why are we talking about this? Well, in May of this year, two critically endangered flapper skate washed ashore in County Mayo. The stranding was reported by members of the public, good on you, to the Irish Whale and Dolphin Group. Louise Overy is a wildlife biologist from Munster Technological University in Kerry, and she was able to study the skates, and she is on the line now to talk to us. Hello, Louise. How are you? Ken has already given us a pen picture of what these incredible creatures look like, but you might add to that description if you would, please.
Yeah. So I suppose a flapper skate, I mean, it's a large flat-bodied skate. They're the largest skate in Europe as well, so they'll grow up to around 2.5 meters, so they really are a magnificent animal, spectacular. Sadly, they're also critically endangered. So the International Union of Conservation has listed them as critically endangered, which basically means on the brink of extinction. So what's been happening around its entire range is that there's teams, researchers, scientists, governments all trying to throw, I suppose, the conservation toolbox at this species to try and reverse this decline or at least try and halt it. So there's a huge amount of efforts going on to try and figure out the best approach, what will work, and yet lots of international effort going on.
Is it being gobbled up by something?
So it's a large-bodied skate that lives on the seabed.
Right.
And of course, that means that they sometimes come into contact with our fisheries. Now, they've been listed since 2009 as a prohibited species. That means they're not allowed to be captured or retained on board. So, you know, nobody's actively targeting this species, but they are just because of where they live, they do sometimes get swept up. And because they are so large, does have a big impact on them. The other, I suppose, big problem for the flapper skate is similar to many of the what we call elasmobranchs, which are sharks, skates and rays. They're typically very long-lived, but also very slow to reproduce. So it means that if they have any impacts to their population, it takes them a long time to recover. Might only lay maybe 40 eggs a year, and those eggs are going to have to sit on the seabed for about 18 months before they'll hatch. And then they've got to make it to at least maybe even 2 decades, maybe around 20 years old, when we're, you know, still trying to figure out exactly when they become sexually mature. But it takes them a long time to become sexually mature. So you can see just any kind of loss to their population takes a long time to recover.
Yeah.
And that's what we've seen across their range. In Holland, they were seeing a decline in the 1920s. And here in Ireland, particularly around the kind of 1960s, 1980s, we saw a steep decline in the numbers that were being reported.
And how unusual was it to find two stranded?
I could be wrong, but it could be the first time that they've ever been reported stranded on Irish shores. So this was a really unusual event that happened, and we thank the public so much for reporting it as well.
Hi, Louise. This is Ken here, Ken Whelan. I was delighted to know that you're coming on the programme with us today, because for about 20 years or more, I ran the Salmon Research Agency on the shores of Clew Bay. And as you know, Clew Bay is a very famous area for what we used to call common skate. And before that, I worked with the Inland Fisheries Trust, and our job was to look after sport fish. And of course, common skate, as we called them at the time, were really important to us. I was fascinated to hear, because I was at a big conference called Sea Monitor a few years ago, that now we have two species. We have flapper skate and we also have blue skate, which we collectively used to call common skate in the past. If you could tell us a little bit about the difference between the two skate, between the blue skate and the common skate.
Yeah, most definitely, Ken. Lovely to chat with you as well. I suppose they're the common skate complex, as we often group them now, is what we call a cryptic species. So very hard to spot the difference if you're looking at them physically. But through genetic techniques, they realise that actually these two, the flapper skate, as you said, and the blue skate, are actually two very distinct species. And they seem to maybe even have potential distribution change as well, so that they almost seem to have a slightly separate distribution, potentially due to temperature sensitivities. But I mean, it's a bit, you know, it's just one of these amazing things. That was 2010 that we realized that actually this one, what we thought was one skate species, is actually two. And I suppose that's further confused our ability to conserve it. Very hard to tell apart physically if you look at them. And their egg cases, however, there is a size difference in the egg cases as well. So, but yeah, it's what we would call a cryptic species. So just adds to the kind of conservation challenge of trying to safeguard them.
Louise, back in February, I travelled to Cork and I was interviewing Dr. Danielle Orrell. And I know she works with you. She's collaborating with you. And I know she was looking for the nursery grounds of the flapper skate. Now, she told me at the time she was out catching and tagging and monitoring these skate. And at that time, she had trapped 37 animals. How is it going now?
It's going really well. They're actually tagging more skate this year as well, so they're building on that number. The more we can get tagged, the more information we can gain about their movements. We get a better understanding of, is it the females that are staying resident, or is it the males, or are the males more mobile, or is there kind of a site residency? And then also the seasonality, I suppose. As Danielle mentioned to you previously, what we'd be really interested in is trying to identify, you know, kind of critical areas of their life history. Is there areas that they use predominantly for mating? Is there areas that they use predominantly for feeding? And more indeed for laying egg cases. I'm not sure if you've heard about the MPA, for instance, Marine Protected Area, that was designated in Scotland specifically for flapper skate egg cases. It was discovered by scallop divers at the time. They'd put through rush legislation to be able to protect this area from, you know, any potential, you know, bottom disturbance such as trawling. And that was, you know, that's really significant. If we can identify key life stages that we could protect or kind of avoid the use of those areas, that's, you know, has a huge impact on the overall conservation. And indeed, actually, speaking of marine protected areas, there was another one designated in Scotland around Jura. And then this is one of the world's only MPA designated specifically for the flapper skate. And they've been having some really good outputs from that, actually. They've actually seen a very cautious, we have to be very cautious about it, but we have seen an increase in the population associated with this MPA. So the more we can learn, the more we can identify kind of key areas, and we can kind of tailor our use of the sea around these key areas for these critically endangered species.
Yeah, she was also trying to impress upon me the importance of working with coastal communities and that they were constantly looking for help from the public.
Yes, completely. I mean, we wouldn't know what we know if it wasn't for the help of the fishing community. You know, they're out there, they're seeing it and they're reporting it back to us, and that really helps us figure out and identify these key areas. So, you know, we're so thankful to the fishing community for all of their help, because, of course, they too want to see these species safeguarded into the future as well. So,
Louise, I'd like to take you back, if I could, to the strandings. I was fascinated with that, because certainly in my experience, I've never heard of that happening before, as you were saying. But it's great. On the Mooney Show here, we can speculate. And I'd like to speculate, if I may, because we're seeing some extraordinary changes, both in terms of our lochs and our rivers, that are related to temperature. And I know that you're having now your marine heat waves and we're seeing all sorts of changes along the south coast. I'd like you perhaps to speculate as to why you think these fish may have been stranded. Is it perhaps temperature changes in terms of the loch? Is it to do with perhaps feeding patterns that are changing? Because it's really important that we monitor these areas and understand these changes, because in reality, they're creeping up on us. And I'm not sure we're actually really taking the significance of these seriously.
Yeah, you're completely right. I mean, the marine environment is changing so rapidly. And indeed, actually, I said that this was our first ever reported stranding here in Ireland, but they did actually have a flapper skate also strand in March in Scotland as well this year. So I suppose these two were actually live stranded. I'm not sure if that was conveyed, but they were actually both live stranded. So what caused their live stranding? You might not be able to be determined. Some other studies in the United States, for instance, have found that over 70% of 156 strandings that they did all of the tests on, they actually found that 70% of them were caused by meningoencephalitis, which was actually typically caused by protozoa or bacteria. But also then in the other, I suppose 14% would actually have been caused by trauma. So I suppose the more we know, and that's why it's really important that we're able to take advantage of this really sad event to try and capture as much information as we could about these two, both male actually, flapper skates that washed ashore.
You were talking about the Loch Soart and Jura, that marine protected area. Give us a concept as to what you would do if you were in charge of Clew Bay. What sort of protection do these fish need in the context of an extensively used bay such as Clew Bay?
Oh, that's a really good question. I suppose we're still at very early stages trying to figure out quite where, what, how they're using the area. So, you know, I wouldn't be able to say for sure. There's others that would be much better rehearsed in what the findings they're getting is, that would be able to answer that question much better than me. And there's a fantastic project that's just been established actually called Mosaic. And it's a big collaborative project whereby they're going to use multiple different, I suppose, conservation tools. They're going to use what we call baited remote cameras to try and capture what's going on the seabed. So these are all kind of less invasive technologies. Then they're going to be using that kind of acoustic technology Danielle, I think, spoke about previously with you. And they're also going to be using techniques such as eDNA. And this will all help us to identify really and really get into the, you know, because Clew Bay is a very big area. So it's very important that we have a really solid understanding of what's going on to be able to best help this species into the future. And that's what the Mosaic team are hoping to do. So I think some of the partners in the Mosaic team, you have people from, I think, even including Canada. But we've got the Marine Institute here in Ireland. We've got, I think, Queen's University and I think Edinburgh University are all kind of coming together to try and answer this big question of how do we best protect a very large and very mobile species? Because, of course, they are very mobile. Some of those MPAs I mentioned previously, they found kind of areas where those flapper skate are spending more time. And that's really easy to identify those areas, but they are highly mobile. So we need to make sure that there's a connectivity across their entire range of areas whereby we can help to try and support them. And I suppose that's where the public can help, is by reporting anything they see, particularly, unusual species, but your flapper skate, even a sighting of a basking shark, all of these will really help us to understand whether, you know, the species are moving. Are they going further north because the food's moving? Are they stressed because of the temperature is changing? And so the more information we have, the quicker we can detect these changes. And I suppose the quicker we might be able to put in and tailor our, responses and measures that we've put in place to try to support these species. So the public are so incredibly important. We just went through a whole process actually called the ISRA process, where it was an international effort to try to identify all across the world. This is led by the IUCN, but all across the world, they're trying to identify important areas for sharks and rays. And the importance of citizen science throughout this whole process internationally has been incredibly evident, and has really helped to inform a lot of what we know. Just even casual dive records, people reporting egg cases that they found on the seashore. It all comes together to build a really important picture of species, which, as you said, we never see, near on impossible to track without all of these dedicated scientific surveys otherwise.
Okay, well, Louise, thank you very much indeed. I really appreciate it.
Perfect.
Thank you. Bye.